the rest of the story. It happened on the edge of the springtime of the year 1974 that a small group of farmers set out to dig themselves a well. The March afternoon was pleasantly unseasonably warm. Work proceeded smoothly until one of those industrious shovels jabbing into the soil 20 feet down struck somebody. More precisely, somebody's head. The astonished farmers muttered among themselves, then resumed digging, furiously now, to uncover what appeared to be a long-buried, fully clothed corpse. And when their excavation was complete, there lay in the waning sunlight the perfectly preserved body of a soldier, a warrior from some long-ago past. And from the style of the weapon still clutched in his hands, there's no telling how ancient he might have been. In any event, the farmers, recognizing the potential significance of such an archaeological treasure, promptly notified the civil authorities. They, in turn, apprised the proper scientific authorities. They eagerly dispatched a team of archaeologists to the site of the farmland well. And so it was that a new and widespread excavation began, through the course of which the bodies of more ancient soldiers were uncovered. And I mean a great many more. A forensic scientist might have concluded that the soldiers had died where they stood, poised in battle positions, as though captured amid a war in the grotesque geological snapshot of volcanic lava. But forensic science bore no relevance here. For the figures of these soldiers, bearing the genuine battle-ready weapons of their day, longbows and crossbows, broadswords and spears, those figures were just that. They were figures, breathtakingly realistic statues with lifelike facial expressions fashioned from unglazed earthenware, and not hundreds of them, thousands of them, nearly 8,000 terracotta soldiers unearthed so far, deploying over a battleground 500 acres wide. Well, it has been determined that those warrior likenesses were created to guard a vast underworld all their own, a sprawling army watching over a splendid city, a city of palaces which lay under a mound 15 stories high. And through that mystical subterranean metropolis coursed reproductions of the nation's principal rivers. And in those waterways, by mechanical means, was made to flow quicksilver, which then emptied into a miniature ocean. For once upon a shining age gone by, there was a good king who united his kingdom after two centuries of bitter conflict. And that accomplished, he undertook ambitious national projects, irrigation systems, 1,500 miles of roads, a great wall. And when he was finished, he dug his own grave. But what a grave! An imperial city in which he would reside after death, surrounded by sculpted soldiers, each the individual likeness right down to the facial features of a warrior in the king's own imperial guard. And at last he did die, and he was entombed in his underworld, replete with mercurial rivers flowing into a shiny quicksilver sea, 2,200 years ago. For he was Qin Shi Huangdi, the first emperor of China, and his tomb, though located, has yet to be entirely uncovered. But it waits, an empire of the earth, asleep for two millennia, about to yawn and open its eyes to greet the dawn of the 21st century, and to reveal to the brave new world the rest of the story.